don't need no education. Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Pete Hegseth. School is now in session.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us today on Education Nation. I hope you're all having a wonderful Saturday, and I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom. Today, we are continuing our series on technology in the classroom, and we have two Education Nation veterans joining us today. My co-host for the morning is Jenica Dixon, who's okay. been on the show or the mic with us before. How are you doing today, Jenica?
Good, thank you.
All right. You were here to talk about classical education.
Yes, I was.
I think in one of our earliest shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, first or second.
She drives all the way from River Falls.
Love it.
Welcome back, Jenica.
Thank you.
And then our guest this morning is Linda Bell, and Linda heads the MAC program, Minnesotans Against Common Core, and she has been a great advocate in the state of Minnesota for education reform, and also a great guest here on our show, Education Nation, multiple times. We're so thankful to have you once again.
Well, thank you for having me back.
And it's fun to have everybody here together. We are going to have a great conversation today about, again, continuing on technology in the classroom and what role it has versus what role it should have. Talk about the tail wagging the dog a little bit here. Where is it all coming from? So let's talk a little bit about why this can be. We're seeing an explosion of technology in our culture today. All we have to do is look at, a mom in the grocery store trying to keep her child happy with the little, iPhone in his or her hands, and they know how to do things that, it's hard to believe that a 2 or 3 or 4 year old child could even imagine knowing how to do using technology. So we know that it's explosive. We know it's everywhere, and we know that it is an important tool, and that it has made our lives in some ways simpler and in some ways much more complex. But it's certainly been a beneficial tool, the way it has connected us. Mm-hmm. So I think what's happened is that as we see this explosion of technology, I think there's a lot of thought out there that somehow that should translate into being better for education as well. That technology in the classroom must be important, must be better. It must make education better. It's almost kind of like this whole evolution of any type of product that you would expect education is going to include technology because technology is such an important part of the world in which we live. Mm-hmm. And so there seems to be this notion that bringing technology into education is really, really important, or may even be essential in some people's minds. And yet, when we look at the research, we find differently. And we're going to be talking a little bit about that a little bit later in the show.
Well, and if I can interrupt for just a second, when you say technology in the classroom, all I can, like, the first thing in my head that I think of is like an Apple commercial or a Microsoft commercial where everything is really smooth and colorful and all these tablets are spinning around and everything's popping up in an instant. And I think that's what everybody has in their minds when they think of technology. Yes, it'll be colorful and fast and it's utopia and it's awesome.
Right.
And well, of course, that's what we see in the commercials. So what are the kids actually getting? And I've got three small children. I'm curious and I don't know much about it.
Right.
So that's what I want to know.
Yes, exactly. Well, and we have to ask ourselves, because there is a concern for this, because though it does seem flashy on the TV, as Jenica is pointing out in ads, this really is a part of our classrooms today. And I think we need to talk about where it's all coming from. You know, this notion that it's important is one thing, but there are some actual very concerted efforts out there that have been brought to bear on education that has brought technology into the classroom. Linda, why don't you talk about where some of this is all coming from?
Well, we have We have Bill Gates. We have some philanthropists that are very, very interested in pushing this. Of course, Bill Gates was the CEO of Microsoft, we might mention, and IBM and other companies. Lou Gerstner also had a foot in this. And they're very, very interested in promoting technology.
Self-interest,
right. And so Bill Gates has taken up this very large portion of funding, Common Core. Mm-hmm. He is the largest funder for this initiative, mm-hmm. And as well has funded Pearson, which is the largest multinational conglomerate curriculum testing company in the world.
Wow.
And CEO of Pearson wants to be the only curriculum and testing company. He just said that in the last 2 weeks in an interview.
Wow.
He wants to eat up all the other little companies.
Because a monopoly is never bad.
I was just going to say, talk about a monopoly on the market. You know?
That never goes badly. What are you talking about?
I wonder if the government will choose to get involved with that one. They go in and they break up the monopolies in the airline industry and other industries, but I wonder if they will care about the curriculum, because I think it's serving their purposes.
I think they're working together.
Yes,
this is one of those public-private partnerships.
That is. I was actually going to talk about that as well.
Funny how monopolies work in those.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Pearson is one of the culprits.
Yes.
We know that Bill Gates is a big funder of that, and I'm sure he probably saw the success that Apple had by introducing their iPads and some of their Apple products into the schools. And thought, I need a corner of this market, and I think I'll help education at the same time, in his mind. And so I think he probably sees it as a dual purpose. I don't think I'd like to give him some benefit of the doubt that
Absolutely.
He is trying to help strengthen education across the world. But I don't know him personally, but I would like to believe that. But I do know that the self-interest piece is gigantic, that I believe that we see a lot of these tech giants getting involved with education because they see it as the next big realm of money-making profit.
Can I ask a quick question? When you say Pearson, I remember high school, like I had Pearson textbook this, Pearson textbook. Is that the same?
That's the same.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it's the same.
Yes.
And let me tell you, Pearson is located on some of the most expensive real estate in all of America. It's located in Manhattan, in Midtown Manhattan, and it is right across the street from the College Board.
Oh, how convenient.
Yes. So I'm sure that David Coleman has a lot of conversations with Pearson on a daily basis since they're right across the street from each other.
Wow.
So anyway, so Pearson's, yes, that's the same Pearson.
Okay.
Talk a little bit more about some of these other realms that have brought education or technology to bear on education, Linda.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to mention, too, Pearson is behind the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. That is a company that holds these assessments.
Which, by the way, had lots of problems the last couple of years.
Correct. And
unreliable results.
Right, unreliable. They are heavily used across Minnesota for online or text curriculum. And also, they partner with the PARC, the PARCC, one of the two national consortia for the Common Core, when the government tried to just have two tests for the entire country. Mm-hmm. So they are very, very much a part of all of these. Then we have some other initiatives that are happening from the federal level. Again, these are not local things. Mm-hmm. This is no one is thinking this up at the local level. We have Connect All Schools, which is an initiative to bring schools together from across the world, actually, online. And that is UNESCO, the RAND Corporation, and the Qatar Foundation.
And UNESCO, I just want to go back, and for our listeners, that is the UN.
That's the
education arm of the UN.
Right, correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. Mm-hmm. And so that is their whole purpose, is to connect all the schools across the world with similar curriculum by the end of 2016.
Right, right. And this was very much a part of the Common Core's goals.
Correct.
I have a teacher who used to be at our school. She taught for us for 3 years. She's now in the Middle East as a teacher, and has served as a teacher both in Jordan and now in Saudi Arabia. And she heard an interview that I did on Common Core here right in the Twin Cities. And she wrote to me immediately, and she said, Rebecca, Common Core is sweeping the Middle East as well.
Yes.
And I was shocked. But when I hear that one of the Connect All School partners is Qatar, which, though it's a country, it's also an organization.
Right.
That you said is partially owned by the Muslim Brotherhood. It shouldn't surprise us then that the Common Core curriculum is sweeping the Middle East, because there, it sounds like they're a large funder behind all of this.
It's sweeping every country.
Every country.
Every
even
country.
Even in Europe. And
even in Europe.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was not aware of that. So Connect All Schools is very successful in their
endeavor. It is.
Endeavor.
And they have over 100 partners. Now, these are partner curriculums, mm-hmm. and one is called World Savvy, and it's used at some schools here in Minnesota. So it's not like it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's here
it's
already.
Here.
And the main purpose of the Connect All Schools, other than connecting everyone online, is to promote global citizenship.
Right, right. So this is definitely the first step that we see that has been very successful in leading to the elimination of nations and that type of thing, and moving more towards getting the students on board with the philosophy of a one world type of a situation.
It does seem to be what this is about.
Right. Yep. Now, you know, we know that that is probably a long way off, but these things happen in steps and
stages. I would actually push back on that. I'm in my early 30s right now, and I have friends even who are who definitely identify themselves as world citizens, global citizens.
Before and, being an American citizen, even.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
They even people as old as their 30s, and of course anything younger than that, they're definitely even more so. But they identify first as global citizens and world citizens. And for me, I was an international business major. I love global everything. I absolutely love it. But one of the things that I love about it is the national identities around the world.
Right.
Uniqueness. Their uniqueness.
Right.
They're beautiful.
Right.
I don't want everybody to look like me. I don't want everybody to talk like me. And to have that just be pervasive around the world. Okay, here's this little bit of whatever it is, colonialism, Western, this. We're sweeping the world and we're making everybody alike. Goodness gracious, why in the world would we want that?
Right. Very boring.
It is.
Yes, it's the cookie cutter.
It's the cookie cutter
approach.
And for some reason, this has become our ideal, and I don't understand that. If you are a Japanese citizen, good. Tell me about you. If you're an American citizen, good. Tell me about you. But this global citizen, it's absolute bull.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. Go, Jessica.
How do I really feel about it?
Let's make it known.
Went off on a tangent there.
That's
sorry.
Okay.
But that's my I was an international business major.
Right.
This is ridiculous.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know, let's tie into that. We see that this is the norm or becoming the norm in education.
Correct.
And I know that there's a couple of other initiatives that you wanted to bring up here, Linda, before we go to the break, that have also really led to the students having technology in the classroom on a widespread basis.
Yep, and one is Connect Ed. Mm-hmm. Connect Ed is, again, a federal policy. It's not a law. Mm-hmm. And the whole point here is for superintendents to agree to this and to promote daily online curriculum and daily online testing.
So daily.
So,
they make an agreement.
Daily. Yeah, it's an agreement. Now, it's made without the school boards.
Right.
You see how the federal government is coming down to the superintendent?
Yes.
It's
local
like the
control.
Executive branches are doing it all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, local control.
But
that's just a figment of your imagination.
Oh, my goodness.
It is indeed. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that the president did ask was that superintendents would take a future-ready pledge, and they would be flown to the Capitol, and they receive a certificate and a picture with the president that they will take their district into this. And I think our first superintendents in Minnesota was in Wayzata, Lakeville, and Spring Lake Park, and now have over 60 superintendents that have taken the future-ready pledge.
Out of how many districts, do you know?
I think there's something like 350.
Okay.
That's counting charter schools.
That's almost a third. That's almost a third.
Wow.
Yeah, that is almost a third.
There is a lot of money trail here.
Yes, there is. So we are going to take a little bit of a break, but stick around. There's so much more to this issue, and we're going to be digging even deeper into what's behind the tech-driven curriculum after the break.
Thank you.
Education. don't need no thought control.
Well, we are back on Education Nation, and this morning we are talking about technology. As it makes an inevitable creep into our classrooms, or should I say a sprint, we are becoming way too reliant on technology to educate our kids. I would ask that question, but I would state that as a statement as well. And at what cost? You know, this is a big detriment to our kids, and we talked about this quite a bit last week on our show. And we're going to touch on some of those same issues again today. But I want to talk first about the level of commitment of some of these tech firms. You were mentioning before the break, Linda, about some of the ways that the superintendents have been kind of trained to take technology into their districts and, you know, some of the organizations that have really been pushing this.
Yes.
But really, at the heart of this is this insatiable desire for technology on the part of the American, the average American, and this natural thought that, well, it must make it better, right? Because we must think it's better. It's kind of like, you know, Dorothy tapping her shoes together during Wizard of Oz, you know? But it's also because it's being driven by these tech giants. And I mentioned earlier, too, that Apple's been involved in education for quite a while. And I think that Bill Gates probably saw that his business plan was working. Educate the kids with the technology, and they're going to use your technology. So Bill Gates decides, I better get involved in this action if I want to have a business still.
Well, what shocked me when you were telling me about this was the amount of money. I mean, of course you want your own tablets in every classroom. I mean, when the government's willing to buy that amount of inventory off your hands, my word, get in on that action.
We have so much money, and, you know, local listeners, all you have to do is ask your districts how much they've spent on technology in recent years compared to what it used to be. And St. Paul Public Schools, I know, just poured millions of dollars into technology when it could be spending that money on teachers and
they
more counselors and what have you. So, yes, it is sucking the money right out of the classrooms. There is no doubt about it. But we have a new entrance into this realm, and that's Mark Zuckerberg. Facebook giant has seen, we've got, you know, Google and Apple in the action here. I want a piece of this action. And he just recently made an announcement that he is going to invest in personalized learning. He says, we think that personalized learning makes sense. Of course, not based on any type of research whatsoever. and it says in this article in Education Week that he plans to give eventually 99% of their Facebook shares, 99%, which is worth an estimated $45 billion, to a variety of causes that are headlined by the development of software that understands how you learn best and where you need to focus. Well, where do you think they're going to get that research? We talked about the FERPA laws in another show a couple weeks ago.
There won't be any strings attached.
We know that the data for this research is coming directly from our current children in our classrooms.
Right.
Pretty shocking.
They're guinea pigs.
They are guinea pigs in the classroom. And I want to talk a little bit about what this whole personalized learning thing is.
You know, what you just said, he's giving up 99% of his stocks to pay for this.
Right. So we know what he thinks the payout is going to be.
He is a true believer in all of this.
On the other side, he clearly believes that he is going to be on the other side making a lot more than that. It's the holy grail right now. This personalized learning issue is the holy grail.
They're dying
in
the
technology
sword.
World. Yeah. It is absolutely, they think they're going to make a ton of money with this. And personalized learning, I'm going to say it was defined in this particular article. I could explain it, but I think it's easier to read it. In the world of K-12 education technology, personalized learning generally means using software and other digital technologies to tailor instruction to each student's strengths and weaknesses, interests and preferences, and optimal pace of learning. Now, on the outside, that might sound kind of good, but let's ask ourselves, how do we get that information?
Who's in charge of that? Who is in charge of that information? Who is deciding which child gets to have it, the information present it slower or faster? Who is in charge of that?
Right.
And those decisions.
Right, right. And they have to be collecting a lot of data to personalize and tailor that.
So is it are they planning on it being determined by algorithms? I mean, is this all happening in code instead mm-hmm. of by teacher?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is.
You're kidding. Not teacher-driven.
It is. Yes. And that's
so
what
teachers
we're...
are being rendered obsolete, basically.
Yes.
And
yes.
nobody's concerned?
Nobody's I don't think anybody knows yet. I have seen a few articles rise up. Actually, I think I've seen them through Mac that talk about plans at the state and district levels, that there will be the need for fewer and fewer teachers in the classroom as more and more technology drives the curriculum.
What is their goal, to have everybody just sit with goggles on?
And technology screens?
Probably so. Well, we know
maybe
that
not goggles, but
there has been a huge number of teachers across the United States that have quit, mm-hmm. not just with the Common Core standards, but also with the heavy influx of technology, they're no longer teachers anymore.
Right.
They have no creativity, no innovation. Mm-hmm. Although they say that this is innovation, mm-mm, but mm-mm. it is not.
No, when it's the term personalized learning is a real misnomer, because it is tailored maybe to this person through technology, but it is certainly not personal.
No.
And it leaves out the whole component of discussion and creative. Mm-hmm. Creative ideas within mm-hmm. the classroom on the part of the teacher.
It takes away the human component.
It takes the human component
caring for
away.
One another, and it's just so dry.
And truly, that is what education is.
Well, I think mm-hmm. of my kids, and I've got all three at Liberty Classical Academy with you, and when you say personalized learning, I think of their teachers there who, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're auditory, visual, or kinesthetic. Your child will learn
right.
because that teacher is approaching every student, and they're doing everything possible to reach a kid.
Exactly.
You're standing up, sitting down, speaking, listening, writing, being creative, playing outside, inside.
Right.
I mean, three recesses mm-hmm. in a short day. And that's personalized learning. You're able to actually take in information.
Right.
What you're describing here with technology in the classroom sounds like you've got basically a tablet in front of you. You're taking multiple choice tests, and then the algorithm is determining where you go next.
Right, right. And creating the pathway then on which you would go as a student, which would then further determine your pathway as an adult. Do you go to college or do you go to a tech school?
That'll end well.
Right. Well,
wow.
Here's my hope. My hope is that Americans are different than the average citizen across the world, mm-hmm. and that they will wake up to this and say, absolutely not, I will have nothing to do with this, and insist that their students not be taught this way. My fear, mm-hmm. that's my hope,
right.
my fear is that it's the old frog in the boiling pot scenario,
right, right.
where mm-hmm. when, you know, the water is only slowly brought to a boil, mm-hmm. we don't notice these indiscriminate changes over the course of time. There's also not a lot of knowledge about what's happening in the classrooms, as parents have been pushed more and more outside
yes.
of
and
the school.
And the media's not reporting on this.
Right.
right.
Well, I don't mm-hmm. think they realize to what extent.
Other than this show.
Yes, other than this show. We are different.
Well,
we are exposing.
Everybody is thinking of technology like an Apple commercial, like
right.
a Microsoft commercial. We're thinking of all the shinies. And from what you're describing, it basically is a giant commercial to get them more profits.
It is.
And, I mean, I'm not anti-corporate. I'm not trying to rail on corporate America here.
And we're
but
not
this
even
is a connection.
Anti-technology. It's the
right.
place.
It is.
It's the place.
Well, and
it needs to be. Mm-hmm. It's a tool. It mm-hmm. is not the end-all, be-all. And
mm-hmm. it should be a means to an end and not the end itself.
Right, right.
And what you're describing is I'm imagining kids staring at screens instead of being taught, but having the algorithm determine multiple choice here. All right, now you go learn a few more facts, multiple choice test, learn a few more facts. I mean, this is...
It's a box.
It is mm-hmm. a box.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
absolutely boxed. And it baffles me that more people aren't... shock number one at the profit
mm-hmm,
trail,
mm-hmm.
and shock number two that their kids aren't actually learning. I mean, they're
right.
being assessed,
right.
but they're not...
Right.
Right. Learning.
Well, and that's why we continue to see the test scores going down. You know, we have the latest national report card that just came out that once again showed that the scores are going down, not up. And we don't see benefits directly connected to technology in the classroom. In fact, what we hear reports of other instead is that it actually stands in the way of the creativity of the teacher. It stands in the way of the student learning. It stands in the way of valid testing. And we are really having problems with it.
Well, forget even creativity. I mean, so we have a friend who's about 19. She just graduated from high school a year ago, and we were talking, my husband and I were talking with her about technology in the classroom, and she rolled her eyes. For a 19-year-old, this is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
She rolled her eyes and said, that's ridiculous. Our high school has handed an iPad to every student, and all they do is they walk through the hallways with it, just staring at it. They bump into us. They don't even...
They bump into each other, you mean?
Oh, yeah. They bump... Yeah, yeah. And she was a senior.
They're not looking where they're going.
Right. She's a senior at the time. She's like, these freshmen are just dumb. They're walking through the hallways with this iPad. It's ridiculous. Then you get to class, and half the class is completely wasted because half the class can't get online.
Right.
The other half, because, of course, the broadband isn't set up to have 600 iPads downloading videos all at the same time. And then the other half of the class is going to the wrong website, and then the link doesn't work
there
for a quarter of them. I mean, it's a ridiculous waste of time, and the teacher's standing up... No, it's the other link. No, Johnny, not the... No, Susie, no, touch the... Okay, no, hold on. No, get off of there. No, it's the other... No, go to the other connection. I mean, that's a class now. And it's ridiculous that we're actually...
The teachers don't really know where the kids are at most of the time with their iPads. They really don't. They don't know if they're on the right page or not.
Right.
Right, they're out of controls.
And as quick as a snap, they can go from one page to another. So even if they have a way of knowing, they can't be seen. They don't have eyes on all sides of their heads. And those kids can snap from one page to the next.
What you just mentioned,
lickety-split.
When the iPads came into a particular district that I was talked to about from a couple of teachers, within the year, the noise level that used to occur in between classes, friends seeing friends walking down the hallway, talking about this and this, the noise level went down to almost nothing.
Oh, that's so sad. Does that not seem like something out of George Orwell?
A little dystopian.
Yes.
Well, this may be a little bit off topic, but what worries me as a parent of young children is the fact that if you have a screen, you can access anything, and the internet's a cesspool. And handing these screens to every kid, do you really think a 13-year-old is going to go exactly where you tell them to go? To PBS? Where do you think they're going to go? And they're going to hide it from you. Mm-hmm. And the porn epidemic that is sweeping our high schools, I mean, I was just talking to a mom whose high school son is constantly bombarded with it. And another mom was talking to me about this, too. Her high school son was constantly bombarded with it from his friends. They all have devices. They all know where to go.
Right,
and we're throwing these devices at these kids without even thinking about it.
Right.
But I'm sorry to return back to what you're saying about learning. Mm-hmm. I see these kids in the classroom with their iPads and they're just staring at the screens, and the teachers are basically technicians now. Mm-hmm. They're not getting up. They're not talking. They're not writing. They're not reading. They're not thinking. They're not learning.
It seems very depressing and sad, doesn't it? Just
that picture
mm-hmm. of silence, that picture of cookie cutter,
and yet at the same time, we want the chickens we eat to be free range,
right?
And yet not our children.
But not our children.
We want ourselves, our office working adults, to have good chiropractors to counteract the effects of technology and sitting at a screen all day, but we're encouraging it for our children.
Right.
How is this okay?
But when it flies in the face of all the research, there is so much research out there that shows that this is not good for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, Jenica and Linda, we could talk about this for a long time, and we may have to go back to another show. But unfortunately, we have reached the end of our show today, and I want to thank you both for joining me, and to all of our KLBB listeners.
Thank you. Sounds great.
Have a great weekend, folks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.